Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Tristan Nunez, driver of the 7-0 Skyactiv Mazda prototype, and you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the February 2nd edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder, episode 99 of the series. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and on tonight's program, Michael Mullally and myself will be reviewing the Rolex 24 at Daytona, delving into some of the controversies surrounding the recent NASCAR rule changes, and chatting about whatever other exciting news of the world of modern motorsports pops up into the conversation. Last weekend, the International Motorsports Association opened the 2017 racing season with the Rolex 24 at Daytona. This four-day event featured not only the amazing prototype and GT action of the 24, but also some amazing sports car action on Friday afternoon in the Continental Tire Series. Returning to the program this evening is Britt Casey Jr. Britt made his IMSA debut in 2014 with Freedom Autosport at just 16 years of age. In 2015, Britt returned to the team at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca, where he led the race and went on to finish second with co-driver Tom Long. That same year, Britt earned four top tens in only five races. Britt's racing career began in motocross before a transition to karting. He won the 2009 Junior Sportsman Class Championship thanks to seven podiums and five wins in his rookie season. Britt easily made the transition to sports car racing, and in 2013, he finished second in the Spec Miata Cup Championship with an impressive 11 podiums, seven wins, and two poles. We are now pleased to welcome Britt Casey Jr. to the program.
Hey, how's it going, Adam? Thanks for having me on again. Appreciate it.
Not too bad. How are you doing tonight?
Just finished class, so I'm just sitting in the dorm room now. Someplace quiet, so just a long day of classes again.
Can you tell us a little bit how the race was at Daytona?
Sure. I think most people know that are familiar with the IMSA Continental Tire Series. It's multi-manufacturers involved between GS and ST. And with the BOP adjustments, all the different cars in the series have different strengths and weaknesses. Ours is really, we're really good at handling and really good at braking. Our mid-corner speed is a lot more impressive compared to the other cars. But what we do lack in is overall top end speed. So we're down a little bit on the straightaways. So Daytona, notoriously fast track, obviously, both the NASCAR track and the 24-hour layout, doesn't really play well into our car's strengths. So what we lack in is the two long straightaways that are at that track. So it's a little difficult to hold on. We do have to work together a little bit. That being said, if we had a car in the top 10, we were going to be happy. Well, we ended up having all three, finishing 6th, 9th, and 10th. And you would have thought we won the race the way we were celebrating in the pit box. So it was a great weekend for our Mazda MX-5s. The 27 Trump car came in 10th. And ninth was the 26 with Liam and Andrew, and then 25 was in sixth with Chad and Steven. So we were all, really happy how it all turned out. And then, now we go to Sebring where our car should shine a little more. So
you just mentioned you're hanging out in your dorm room this evening. How do you balance school and racing?
Good question. Believe it or not, it's actually, I've found easier now that I'm in college. I go to Loyola University Chicago. I'm a business management major, freshman, second semester now. And I've actually found that racing is a little more malleable in college. A lot of classes don't take attendance, even though the school has smaller class sizes, which I like. So, and also not to mention the syllabus. I have a syllabus now, and in high school, they always tended to keep things secret until they wanted people to know about them assignment-wise. And in college, I just look at the syllabus and I know exactly what's going on day by day. So, you know, I missed 2 days of every class to race at Daytona. I'll be doing the same for Sebring and Circuit of the Americas later on in the beginning of May. So it's doable. It just takes a little bit of hard work. It's a little different. And it's I kind of get a kick out of it when I have to explain my situation to teachers. They get a laugh out of it. They don't believe me at first, of course, that I race cars, but they warm up to the idea after I show them some evidence. So it's doable. It's difficult at times for sure, but it's worth the extra effort for sure.
What was your favorite part of the 2017 Rolex 24 event?
Well, taking out of the equation, the race that we had on Friday that went awesome for us, all things considered. So during the 24, the weather was not ideal, to say the least. It was cold and rainy for most of it. So we were basically in the Mazda hospitality tent. I didn't stay for the whole race. I did end up going home to the hotel to take a little bit of a nap. But, you know, when we were at the track, especially at night, we watched the fireworks. We were with a lot of the Trump guests that came, as well as Mazda drivers, you know, teammates, and just guys that I know from around the paddock. So it was really a cool event, just hanging out, and then, you know, just being there for majority of the first half, I guess. We were there for a while, and the weather was bad, but we were in some shelter from the cold rain. But it was just cool catching up with everyone and just hanging out.
You're braver than I am. We left about 8:30 because it just got way too cold, and came back the next morning and stayed until about noon on Sunday, and that was it.
I did about the same. It was me and my dad. We stayed later. We stayed till about 1:30. Actually, my dad went to sleep in the car because he knew I wanted to stay for a little longer. So he went to the car for a little, just take a nap, and then around 1:30 a.m. we went back to the hotel, and then came back around probably 9:30 in the morning, and then stayed for a couple hours, and then got on a flight home.
Yeah, Sunday wasn't really much better. The weather was chilly. So.
Yep, I was watching the live stream in the airport.
Mm-hmm. What race are you most looking forward to in 2017?
You know, definitely the tracks that play into our hands the best, specifically, you know, the notorious Mazda Raceway, where a Mazda has been winning there forever. And majority of the time it's been Freedom Autosport. I think we're on a 6-year streak now of winning there. Our Mazdas just play really well at that track, and it's Mazda's home as well. So in addition to that track, I like Sebring. Sebring's cool. It's very physical. It's usually warm, hot, actually. So that's a good track for our cars as well. A lot of the other brands tend to fall off by the second half of the race. And also Lime Rock. Lime Rock's cool. I just really enjoy that track. We're running sub 1 minute lap times, and you just never get a break. And it's, you know, our cars are never really getting passed. We're doing the passing because it's just such a good fit for our cars, with no straightaway and all corners. And it's just, I really enjoy those three tracks.
Now, let me throw you out to my co-host, Michael Mullally, who has a couple of questions for you, and then I'll have a couple more in a few minutes.
Sure.
So what was the toughest part about the Daytona race this year?
You know, we were having some issues with strategy. There were more cautions than have been in the past 2 years. We've been pretty caution-free in general at every race weekend. There were more cautions than we were used to. We did have to make more pit stops for fuel. We only did one tire change. But between all the cars, I think the team did a total of 10 pit stops during that race. So that was a workout for them. They're usually used to, you know, three to five pit stops usually. So, you know, doubling that and then also basically doubling the race distance from the 2.5 hours in the past to now being 4 hours. That was interesting. I liked it. Time flew by in the car. So I think the biggest challenge was trying to develop a strategy over time where we were going to be good on fuel. And then also, you know, not pitting at every single pit stop and or every pit stop opportunity. So we were kind of doing our own thing, and it actually played into our hands, and it's part of the reason we finished so well. You know, the guys in the box and our spotter, Chris Long, who's the mad scientist when it comes to strategy, they really set us up well, so I have them to thank for that.
And out of curiosity, how many laps would you say you made overall this weekend?
Oh, that's a hard question. Between the race and then also all the practice sessions, it would be, you know, hundreds, I would think, between all of them, for sure. I don't remember what the race distance was mileage-wise. And again, there were quite a few cautions, so we weren't green flagged the whole time. So that probably brought the number down more. But definitely, you know, over 100 laps easily.
And what was the most intense moment throughout the weekend for you?
Probably the drafting part of it, where, you know, like I said before, we lack the straight line speed and power to really keep up on the straightaways. So what we do to compensate for that is bump draft, which is, you know, the 25 or the 26 car, or all three, we're all linked up together on the track and pushing each other along on the straightaways, trying to make up as much speed as possible. It's worth a good 5-10 miles an hour if you're doing it right. Now, doing it right means you're right on top of each other all the time, constantly bumping, and it's more difficult than it seems, for sure, trying to set up that draft perfectly so you come out of the corner already linked up just to salvage as much speed as possible and be as efficient as possible. It takes a lot of practice and a lot of getting used to with your comfort zone. So there were a couple close moments with that, with, you know, us bump drafting past a competitor, and it got a little hairy at times, but it's all okay in the end.
And what are some of your ultimate goals for the rest of the season?
Definitely win some races, for sure. I mean, our cars are strong. We've had a ton of years developing these NC chassis MX-5s, and I think, you know, for this year, the cars are getting a little old. So I think they're in need of they're in dire need of another championship. I know we had one in 2015 with Chad and Steven when they were driving for another team, and it was actually the 26 with Andrew Carbonell and Liam Dwyer that were competing for the championship also. So I think, you know, going out this year on a high note would be much deserved for our cars and the rest of the team as well.
What's it like to race for Freedom Autosports, which has at its core such a strong message of support for veterans?
Sure. Well, a lot of people, you know, walk around the paddock. They see our transporter. So Freedom Autosport is a three-car IMSA Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge team in the ST class. We have the three Mazda MX-5s, the 25, 26, and 27 car. So what Freedom does, you know, in a nutshell, besides win a lot of races and we're always competitive, is, you know, it's extremely supportive of the military and the United States veterans that were, you know, coming back from a war wherever it was at their time. And, you know, very supportive of the Semper Fi Fund, which deals with supporting retired veterans and injured veterans, specifically in the United States Marine Corps. And if you're at the racetrack and you see our hauler, it's pretty hard to miss. It's got the tallest flagpole in the paddock, and right at the top of it is a gigantic American flag. So, as the way it should be. The whole transporter, if you look on the right side of it, it has every single name of every United States military service member that has been killed in the war on terror since 9/11. You'd be very astonished to see how many names are on there. And it's a very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a very somber moment, I think. And it's very clarifying to see, what some Americans did for us. And to carry that around to every racetrack, it makes me proud. And I know it makes the rest of the team really proud. And we have more than a couple of veterans on the team working, including Liam Dwyer, who's one of the drivers in the 26 car. He's a retired Marine, twice wounded, actually lost his left leg in Afghanistan in 2011, and he's one of the drivers, as well as a couple crew guys, Bob and Mark. So Mark is actually one of the mechanics on my car, and then Bob is the guy you see on TV pulling Liam out of the car. So it's a really tight group of guys that we have, and what Freedom stands for, I don't think anyone in the Continental Tire paddock can really top us with what. What the purpose of the team is, besides, being fast. And we have a good background story that really isn't ending. I think it makes us really unique, and it's also just really special to be a part of it. And I have huge respect for what guys like Liam, Mark, and Bob have done. Next time you see us in the paddock, come stop by, check out the hauler, and just kind of take in the moment. I always do. It's just a really cool thing to look at sometimes, and it's just something to reflect on, I think.
You mentioned your sponsor name a few times. You've got an interesting name for your sponsor. Aside from the fact the name looks like it could be the president's cousin, what exactly is Trumpf and what do they do?
Yep. So Trumpf is actually a privately owned company, a German company. It's TRUMPF. So Trumpf Incorporated is a subsidiary of the Trumpf Group. And basically what Trumpf does is they're the largest manufacturer of fabricating equipment and industrial lasers in North America. So what they do is basically they manufacture, develop, design, et cetera, their own machines, high quality products and solutions in the area of basically sheet metal processing, which includes laser machines, electronic applications, laser cutters, basically, which you put a piece of sheet metal in, you plug the design in, and it cuts it out in unbelievably fast time. The cutting rate and the strength of the lasers that Trumpf designs is pretty astonishing. I've had the opportunity to check them out a couple times, and it's pretty eye-opening for sure. And they also build and sell hand tools, which are also just as impressive as the machines. The cutting rate is just unbelievable with these things. They're battery powered, yet they chew through metal that's eighth inch, quarter inch thick, and it's just unbelievable.
What was it like working with Robbie Foley as your co-driver?
Sure. I've actually known Robbie for a little over a year now. He was always at the hauler last year. So Robbie is an MX5 Cup guy, formerly. As of last year, he won the Skip Barber Championship in 2015. So that moved him up the miles of the ladder with a fully funded ride to do MX5 Cup with the new Global MX5 Cup car that Long Road Racing built last winter and prepared for this year. And then Robbie won actually the Mazda the Mazda weekend at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca. He won the inaugural race for that too as well. So he's very familiar with the MX-5. We gel really well together. I think we have similar personalities. We're actually both in college. He's a mechanical engineering major at Auburn in Alabama. He's a little older than me. He's got a couple years on me, but you know, experience level in an MX-5 it's really impressive. And you know, for him to come out fresh out of the box at Daytona, never had driven the car before, never had driven the track before, was unfamiliar with the tire that we run. He just, you know, he came out really hot, willing to learn, like a sponge. How I always am with just absorbing as much information as possible. And you know, look at us now. We finished 10th at Daytona in a car that really isn't designed to finish in the top 15 there. So I think, you know, Robbie, really impressive job for him first weekend out, and I think it just showed the true colors of what the Mazda ladder can do, and it definitely produces some prime talent, some prime drivers that really deserve the spots and the opportunities that they're getting.
You mentioned that your next race is going to be at Sebring. What day is that? Are you going to be competing there? I know they have stuff going on all week.
Yep, easy to remember, St. Patrick's Day.
Okay.
St. Patrick's Day in the afternoon. So that Friday, March 17th, day before my birthday, actually. Last year it was my birthday, and we were leading the race for a while. It was pretty cool. So, yes, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day.
Okay, cool. And the car's got some green in it, so it might be lucky for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. A lot of green on the Freedom Autosport team.
There you go. Well, good luck at Sebring, and good luck for the rest of the season as well. Thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it. Hope to be on again soon.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Before we begin our NASCAR discussion, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention some of the other big news of the week. Fans of the show will remember that we have always had a soft spot in our hearts for the IHRA. They have been very helpful to us over the past few years, providing us with race tickets, as well as the opportunity to interview several of their marquee drivers.
Last year, the series underwent numerous changes, first in their schedule, which was drastically reduced, then in the ownership, and then Mike Dunn has been installed as president of the IHRA organization in advance of the complete reorganization of the company and its various operations. Dunn, one of the most successful drivers and team organizers in the history of motorsports, joined the IHRA after spending the last 14 years as the face of Major League Professional Drag Racing for ESPN. Now the series is returning to ESPN, oh my gosh, for 2017. After an absence of 18 years, International Hot Rod Association, the IHRA, drag racing action will return to ESPN's networks in 2017.
The IHRA and ESPN have reached an agreement for 2 days of racing from events in the 2017 IHRA Summit Sportsman National Championship to stream live on ESPN3, ESPN's live multi-screen sports network. IHRA racing last appeared on one of ESPN's networks in 1999. ESPN3 will stream as much as 8 continuous hours from the track on both weekend days for 13 events, much of it live, that will include on-track action, interviews and reports from the pits, features, and more. The first event will be on the weekend of February 4th and 5th, this coming weekend, from Immokalee Regional Raceway, with streaming on ESPN3 beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern on Saturday and noon on Sunday.
ESPN3 is a destination that delivers thousands of exclusive sports events annually. Is accessible on computers, smartphones, tablets, and connected devices through Watch ESPN. The network is currently available nationwide at no additional cost to fans to receive their high-speed internet connection or video subscription from an affiliated service provider. It is also available at no cost to U.S. college students and U.S.-based military personnel via computers, smartphones, and tablets connected to on-campus educational and on-base military broadband and Wi-Fi networks.
This is a major step for the IHRA. It might lead to more good things for the series in the future. We shall see. Our next guest this evening is Derek Capello. It all began at 5 years old when he started riding dirt bikes and then working his way up to intermediates at the age of 16 while venturing off to try race cars at the age of 15. winning multiple championships at local racetrack. He decided to stop riding dirt bikes at the age of 17 and just stuck with cars, racing a variety of Hornets, mini stocks, street stocks, and bump to pass cars, his favorite being the Hornets. He also was given the opportunity to race a 360 sprint car, but couldn't afford it. While circle track racing is in his blood, with the hopes of racing a late model one day full-time. He hopes to start doing more drag racing, race car driver on the weekend, nonstop mechanic during the week. We'd now like to welcome Derek Capello to the program. How are you doing this evening?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I'm going to have Michael do the first few questions for you, and then I got some follow-ups as well.
Okay.
All righty. Well, first of all, what inspired you to make the switch from bikes to cars?
I think what inspired me the most was going to school. I got to listen to all my friends say how fun race cars were. So I decided that I would try and see if I liked it, and sure enough, I ended up loving it, so I just stuck with it.
And do you prefer working on the vehicles or driving
them? Well, of course I'd prefer to drive them, but I get just as much enjoyment out of helping others succeed and having fun and everything with it, too.
What is your greatest racing moment?
Okay, so would you like one about dirt bikes or race cars?
Both.
Both? Okay, I would say dirt bikes. One of my favorite / greatest moments would be probably in, I think it was 01 or 02, we did a series called the Pack West, and it was me, my brother, my dad. We traveled across the state to go to these races for a series. And we went to, like, Albany, Woodland. We went to Horn Rapids and Tri-Cities. We just went to various tracks and competed in a series. And I believe my brother ended up second in the junior class that year. And I think I won my class that year and also broke my wrist. And for the cars, I would have to say, I can't remember the year exactly, but it was season championships. All I had to do was win the race to win the championships, and my older brother Dustin was out there, and we were battling nose-to-nose for probably 12 laps, and right at the finish, he literally just beat me by an inch or two, barely, and yeah, he got me, so I didn't win the championship.
You poor baby. So what is the toughest track you ever raced on?
The toughest track? I would have to say Monroe. I went up there in my Hornet to race, and I went up there, and there was literally 48 Hornet cars at the track, and it was just the toughest crowd of racers that I've ever had to race with. They were just, it was not like a normal track. I don't know what the deal was over there, but I'd have to say that was probably the toughest one I've ever done.
And what does your racing career look like 5 years from now?
Ooh, 5 years from now, I don't even know what this year looks like if I even want to do it. You mentioned in the intro, I'd like to do drag racing. That's one thing I haven't got to do very much of, and I got a couple friends that do it, so I might take that up and put the race cars on the side and help some other people out with that and just pursue the drag racing.
We've talked a little bit on the program before about the fact that there seem to be fewer and fewer local tracks open, especially in your section of the country. How do you feel about that, and what do you think that means for the future of the sport?
Yeah, it kind of upsets me. It's just sad that even if we wanted to race, we'd have to travel so far. And I've raced two tracks that are potentially closed, and they're two of the funnest tracks that I've ever raced on. And it just is a shame that they've been here for years, and now they're just dying out, and people aren't going to get to experience the thrill of those tracks. And our local track is supposed to be one of the funnest quarter-mile tracks in the area, and it's closed.
Mm-hmm. When you start out in bikes, who was your inspiration? Who was your favorite motocross rider?
Oh, I had a couple. I liked Ricky Carmichael when he was in the game, and then it transitioned to James Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
And then now my favorites are James Stewart and his little brother Malcolm Stewart.
That's awesome. And when you transition to cars, who are your favorite racing drivers?
Oh, I've always had the same favorite driver, Jimmy Johnson.
And what's your ultimate racing goal?
My ultimate racing goal would be to be able to get into a late model and drive one of them for a few seasons and see if I can do it or not.
If you were able to race in any track in the country, what would be your dream track to compete on?
Ooh, any track. I don't know. I'd have to probably say Bristol. Bristol looks like it would be a blast to try to drive.
Cool. Well, we wish you lots of luck, and thank you very much for coming on the program tonight, and hopefully you find a good place to apply your racing talents this season and beyond.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a nice evening.
You too.
Our final guest tonight is Dustin Capallo, who has been racing dirt bikes since he was 5 years old. He became a professional motocross racer at 16 and has also raced cars. From a 1970 Chevy Nova, an 89 CRX, to a 350 Chevy Sprint car, a competitive spirit and need for speed are just in his blood. However, dirt bikes will always be his passion. For the past few years, he has competitively raced a YZ250 and a custom-built CR500AF. While he loves Yamahas and bleeds blue, there's just something special about his 500. He and his girlfriend Rachel own and operate a motocross training academy, Laid Out Industries, traveling, training, riding, and racing. They hope to develop the next generation of racers, both on and off the track. Let's see. And it does not appear that he is on hold anymore, unless he's calling from a different number. So let's check and see if this is him. Hello, is this Dustin? Dustin on the line? Does not appear so. Well, while we're standing by for him to call in, let's go ahead and listen to a selection from our musical library, Angel in Flames.
Got
Once again, that was Angel in Flames by Ron Pestana and the Pit Crew. You can find more information about Ron Pestana and the Pit Crew by searching for them in your favorite search engine. They have a lot of songs available. We have pretty much their full library available to us. We play them every week here and there throughout the program. So be sure to search for Ron Pestana and the Pit Crew. Once again, we're standing by for our final guest of the evening, Dustin Capallo. He should be on the air shortly, within the next few minutes anyway. But while we've got a break in the action, let's go ahead and talk a little bit of NASCAR, just a teeny bit, at least about one thing. How do you feel about the fact that Carl Edwards has left the series and is possibly going to run for Congress next year?
I think it's a definite change of careers. And I think running for Congress, he's probably got a pretty good shot. But
yeah.
It kind of seems sudden, his leave from NASCAR.
Well, I think the reason why he's leaving, he stated, I think there were like five reasons, but one of the major ones, his current wife is a neurosurgeon. And when Dale Earnhardt Jr. had all of his issues last season, that really scared the heck out of her. And she convinced her husband that it wasn't worth the aggravation to put yourself through that and for another season and risk ruining the rest of your life. So that's a big deal.
Yeah. What do you think about the rule changes this year?
I think it's going to be different. That's for sure. The cautions sort of are kind of a little bit like the competition cautions they had in the experiment with last season in the truck series. But the fact that they're separating into what, three segments, that's sort of the sort of thing that they do at the 24-hour race. In fact, they have the award points basically every 4 hours during the race. So the people who win the race aren't necessarily the ones who end up with the highest points. Although for this race, the Cadillacs were all in the lead in the prototype series for pretty much the entire race. The Performance Tech was in the lead the entire race for the PC class with Pato O'Ward as the driver there, the main driver, the guy who's been on the show once before, who we're going to do an interview with next week, but it will be an interview for SpeedwayDigest.com. So be sure to check that out. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know if it's going to work out as well as they hope. And the fact they've got the caution periods are supposed to be like the commercial cautions they have for like the NFL, where they have the timeouts and the NHL and all that. But it should be it'll definitely be different. It'll break up the races quite a bit, and that'll be interesting. So who's your pick for the Sprint Cup champion, or not the Sprint Cup champion, the Monster Energy Cup champion for next season?
I don't know. Everybody I pick is like the complete opposite.
So you're not going to go with Joey Logano this year?
Well, I mean, I always have to go with him, but, like, realistically, probably Kyle Busch again, probably, just because he seems to do good pretty much every year.
Yeah, I'd agree with that most of the time, but I think that the fact that Kyle Busch actually picked Jimmy Johnson to repeat for this year, so he might know something that other people don't. So I'll go with Jimmy Johnson for this year. And that'll be that's a pretty good shot. And he'll go with eight, and maybe eight will be enough for him. You never know.
Maybe. And then he'll leave the sport.
Yep. That's what I'm thinking. I'm actually surprised that he didn't leave after seven. I had that, I mentioned that several times last season, especially with the fact that Dale Jr. had his head injury, and Jimmy Johnson's tied with the two of who can be considered the greatest champions in the history of the sport there, with So you never know. It'll be interesting. Well, it looks like Dustin's on the line. So I'd now like to welcome Dustin Capallo to the program. And Mike and Lally,
how are you
ahead
guys
and
doing?
Doing pretty well. How are you tonight?
Good. Sorry, I was calling the wrong number.
No problem. Michael has a few questions for you, and then I'll have a few follow-ups afterwards.
Okay, thank you.
So, when did you first know that professional writing was what you wanted to do?
To be honest with you, I never had the intentions of turning professional. I was put on a dirt bike at a very young age, and I loved it. I wanted to ride, practice, and enter every race I could, and over time, turning pro was the next step. And I was told that I had natural ability at a young age, so I constantly advanced my skills, and over time, just developed my own style.
Interesting. At what age were you put on the dirt bike? Exactly.
I started on a three-wheeler. I'd say 4 years old on the three-wheeler. And then I made the transition to a motorcycle at four.
It was pretty impressive.
Late.
Did you have the little training wheels?
Nope, no training wheels.
Oh.
I think coming off the three-wheeler, it helped with balance and everything already. It's kind of like a pedal bike. Once you have momentum going, it kind of takes care of itself.
So can you explain to us one of your craziest moments on a bike?
Oh, man, there's been a lot of them. I'd say one of my absolute craziest would have to be back when I was racing 60s. I was racing a series in Spokane, and it was a kid's first time ever racing dirt bikes, and he ended up losing control of his bike, and it ended up taking me out and breaking my arm. Well, I ended up having to go to the hospital and get a cast put on my arm. I came back to the track, and they told me that I wouldn't end up getting the championship unless I finished my next moto. So I did. I ended up having to go out there. I didn't ride hard, but I had to go out there and at least do a lap to get my points to get the championship.
Did it hurt?
Oh, it did. But when your adrenaline's pumping, I think that it doesn't necessarily cover the pain, but it helps you not think about it as much.
And did you get that championship?
I did. I didn't think that was necessarily the right way to get it. Even as a kid, I thought that it was more dangerous being on a bike when there was already an injury sustained. So I was kind of frustrated that they made me go out there with a cast already on my arm just to get the points. But I did what was needed.
Yeah. Well, if you had the ability to change anything about the sport, would you change anything? And what would you change if you did?
Well, honestly, I think if there was anything that could be changed, it would be the overall pro rider payout. As far as a pro athlete, the MX racers are on the very low-end pay. You know, I mean, they don't make very much money compared to any other professional athletes out there. I mean, every time that we swing our leg over a bike, we risk it all. And not only that, the privateer struggle is real.
Very interesting. And can you go into a little more detail about Laid Out Industries? What inspired you to start it?
Yeah. All right. About 4 years ago, my girlfriend and I started the company as a way to give back to the motocross community. Our goal is to help bridge the gap our local riders face when it comes to racing at the next level. We strive to provide the training needed to reach their goals, as well as offering experiences to race and ride with the elite riders at their level. Laid out is not only a way of life, but it is a lifestyle. And we give back to this sport that I love.
That's very touching, actually. And can you explain to us some of your greatest racing moments?
Well, yeah, I could actually. One of the ones that comes to mind right now is we recently took a trip down to California, my girlfriend and I, and we drove down there, and I raced the Vet Open class in the Trans World Series, and I ended up winning, and it was just an awesome experience. They ended up putting the race in the Trans World Motocross magazine. They had my name, and it was a good experience.
I know there's been a bunch of changes in the motorcycle racing in the past few years with the modification of some of the super bikes and that sort of thing. How do you feel about the X Games and how their effect on motocross?
I love it. Honestly, I think X Games just gives another form of athletes to show their style, and not only their style, but their struggle. You know, I mean, it's a struggle for everybody out there, finding places to ride, to hone your skills. It's like, for instance, on supercross tracks, it's real technical out there, and a lot of times people don't have an area to practice. So when you go out there, you don't get to actually perform up to your ability.
And where do you go to practice for the events? Are you like one of the big guys that has the facility behind your house? Do you have a buddy who has something, or where do you go?
Oh, negative. No track behind the house. That's always a dream of mine. But lately we've been heading down to California for the winters because it gets so cold up here in Washington. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of the facilities down there offer 6 tracks at one facility. So you can go hone your skills on, for instance, an arena cross style track or supercross, or you can go outdoors and dial in your bike out there.
Mm-hmm.
But up here in Washington, we usually go to Horn Rapids because it's typically open 11 months out of the year.
Okay. One of the biggest races of the year is coming up in Daytona next month as part of the Bike Week thing. Have you ever traveled down here for that?
No, honestly, that's probably one of my biggest races. That's on the bucket list. Daytona is mm-hmm. an amazing event, not only for cars, but like you're saying, for Bike Week.
Mm-hmm. And what's your ultimate racing goal?
Honestly, I think just giving back to the sport I love. I just would like to give the knowledge I've learned over the past handful of years and just try to help others.
That's awesome. Good luck with that. Hopefully it pays off. It's the laid out industry seems like a really, really cool idea, and hopefully it does really well for you.
Oh, I appreciate it. And thank you guys for having me on.
Yep. Thank you. And have a nice evening.
You too.
Once again, we'd like to thank both of the Capallo brothers for coming on this evening, as well as Britt Casey Jr. Britt Casey Jr. will be back on the program. He's scheduled to come back on after the Sebring race. That'll be let's see when that will be. That will be on the 23rd of March, or we might have him on the 30th, because I don't know. No, it'll probably be March 23rd. That will probably be the day, because I'll actually be out of town the following week after that. So, again, he'll be back on the program next month. Either March 23rd or maybe early April, depending on how the schedule works out. So we wish everybody a great racing season. It's looks like it's off to a great start. The crowd at Daytona was huge. There were more than 100,000 people there for the start of the Rolex 24 at Daytona on Saturday. There were probably 50,000 or more there for the race on Friday. And even though the weather was bad, it was unseasonably cold. There was freezing rain in the middle of the night, and it was just really bad. But it didn't stop people from coming out to the event, so that's an awesome thing. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. I also invite you to read the articles covering all aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com. This week, we posted a few articles about the Rolex 24. We've got a bunch of more in the hopper scheduled for the next week. We also have the, as I stated, we've got the interview slated for Pedro Award that will be posted next week as well. It really depends on how his schedule goes, but that should be pretty good. And we've got some other information that's going to be coming out about the NHRA, Supercross, and more. It's going to be an awesome, awesome season, and we hope you're around here to check it out every week. In addition, if you're a fan of South Florida, and who isn't, be sure to check out the latest news and information about our slice of paradise at Palm Beach Happening, which can be found by visiting palmbeach.happeningmag.com.
Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again on February 9th in the Thunderdome, as once again, we will be discussing the major issues in the world of modern auto racing.
Thanks for listening.